Okay, so in many ways, I think non-financial use cases, the first non-financial use case for blockchains is actually public infrastructure. So, and it's important that we think about in this use case what neutrality means and what decentralization means. So the program has changed a little bit, and we're going to talk about that. Polly, do you want to get us started?
Our clicker is not super working, but... Okay, so as Pooja was saying, we're here to talk about digital infrastructure and what does that mean? Not only in the blockchain space, there are all kinds of digital infrastructure, but of course, Ethereum is often envisioned as a potential digital public infrastructure that can be used ubiquitously around the world. So the idea is to do some collective deliberation together on what does that mean, and what are some of the requirements for protocols and standards that are serving this function. So the agenda for today is we're going to kickstart this with two short talks. First, Pooja is going to talk about decentralization, and then Glenn is going to talk about different approaches to neutrality, and what are some of the conflicts between them. And after that, if the slides work, we're going to use a tool called Polis to do a deliberation together. And this tool, I'll explain this to you in a moment, but it's a tool that uses advanced statistics and machine learning to gain some nuanced insights in a digital conversation. And so we'll take these insights, then we'll have an in-person discussion, since that's the benefit of being here at DEF CON. And we'll come back to Polis, we'll do one more iteration reflecting some of the learnings, and then we'll look at the results together. So in essence, this is going to be an exercise in deliberation about digital infrastructure. So I'll hand it over to Pooja to get us started.
Okay, great. I like to walk around when I talk. So as I said, I want to talk about first decentralization. Okay, great. And Glenn will follow up with a prompt on neutrality. So because not everybody has read the paper, I want to kind of give first principles of how I think about decentralization. And really, the question is, how do we build bottom-up decentralized networks? And there are all kinds of like networks, right? We have energy infrastructure, we have physical networks, we have internet infrastructure, internet networks, Starlink. We also have blockchains, we have social media, these are all networks. And the question is, how do we get bottom-up coordination of individuals who are part of communities to compose into larger pluralistic networks of coordination that can solve problems at different social scales? That is how I have conceptualized the question of decentralization. Doing this in a decentralized way. How does this work? So what do we, before I give like a kind of first articulation of the principle, let's just pump our intuitions and think about what do we not mean by decentralization. So, you know, an autocrat controlling energy infrastructure, not decentralization. A benevolent entrepreneur controlling internet infrastructure, not great either. You know, a group of sort of mining pools that control a lot of mining power, hash power, or stake, not great for decentralization. And, you know, corporate monopolies, not great for decentralization. And, of course, there's political centralization as well. And, you know, there's tyranny of the majority, which we're all familiar with in the civil rights movement. There's tyranny of a political elite and technocratic elite. And there's also tyranny of a cultural elite that can enforce their norms and language norms on people who don't necessarily, you know, agree. But I think decentralization is a much more subtle question, because we also have very, very tacit and subtle, what I call accidental over-coordination because of correlated interests. And we see this in particular, and very acutely, and Glenn was the first one who brought this to my attention in his book, Radical Markets, in traditional financial markets. And so in traditional markets, a lot of people, you know, if you're a retail investor, you give your money to an asset manager like BlackRock and Fidelity. And what that asset manager will do will buy stakes across rivals in a particular industry. So say stakes across like every airline, right? But in doing that, they have an incentive to vote as a shareholder, to pressure CEOs to take anti-competitive practices, lower prices, raise prices, lower salaries, not invest in R&D, not invest in innovation. And this is like not really great for markets. And if you have a bunch of groups like Fidelity, BlackRock, you know, State Street, Vanguard, all doing this, it ends up being a kind of, uniform anti-competitive pressure on the entire market and on the entire industry. What you get is the appearance of competition across rivals, an appearance of competition across asset managers, but really what you get is a behavior monopolist. So using this to pump our intuitions, one of the principles we articulated in the DSOC paper was this principle of consensus across difference. And the idea of consensus across difference is that you rather get consensus between differently affiliated people, or just very different people, to surface consensus, and that would be a better signal of a plural shared good across broader groups than, say, consensus amongst a narrow group of individuals who might be sort of intentionally colluding or accidentally over-coordinating in the way the BlackRock and Fidelity example illustrated. Is there any questions about this principle? Go ahead. Consensus between whom?
Between people. Like, we don't have to agree.
Yeah, you don't have to agree. But if you get agreement across, the idea is that agreement across very different people is more likely to signal something that's good for, you know, broader groups than rather consensus amongst people who are very similar, right? Which might be more. Sorry? So, okay, I will move on. We can leave this in.
But you can't just make one comment about that. I actually think you're highlighting a good thing, which is that the point of pluralism is simultaneously identifying areas of cooperation across difference and identifying the areas of difference. So, like, you can't have one without the other in the dance of decentralization and pluralism, and we're going to talk about that, like, we're going to highlight that in the exercise we're going to do later. So I think both are, like, really important.
Yeah, I'll say this, like a lot of discussion in, or a lot of memes in crypto are about coordination and cooperation, but they don't really address the question of conflict, right? And so consensus across difference is a principle that highlights and surfaces like our differences, right? But finds those consensus amongst the most diversely affiliated. So how did we, as a first approximation, express this principle in the paper? Well, we first introduced this primitive called soulbound tokens or non-transferable NFTs to represent memberships to social groups or represent affiliations. And then as a second step, we propose this mechanism of using quadratic voting or funding. How many people have heard of quadratic voting and funding? Just raise your hand. Okay, so you're familiar, right? And the nice thing about this mechanism is it reflects the magnitude, not just direction, of individual preferences and counters some tyranny of the majority. But as sort of the BlackRock example highlights, you know, we're individuals, we're social beings, we're in groups, we're sometimes intentionally colluding, sometimes we're accidentally over-coordinating, and you need to discount the influence of correlated social groups, or in the kind of spirit of quadratic funding and voting, take a square root over the social group. And this gives us a kind of degressive proportionality, which we want, because otherwise coordinated groups tend to drown out less coordinated groups in voice. So to kind of summarize, to get us our bottom-up coordination, the mechanism we proposed is, well, first of all, seeing individuals as nested within communities, and communities being constitutive of their individuals, and capturing the intensity of individual preferences with quadratic funding and voting, but also discounting correlations and, say, over-coordination, accidental or intentional, with social correlation discounts. And with this mechanism, what we're hoping to do, and this is, again, just a first approximation, is to get this kind of nice intersecting, partially nested structure of ever-growing network cooperation extending across, you know, digital and physical infrastructure, and importantly, a paradigm where power is not discrete, it's not binary, it's not rigid, but rather continuous, partial, and recomposing and fluid. So this is a broad and very broad strokes an explanation of, you know, the conception of decentralization that we've ushered forward. I'm going to hand it over to Glenn now, and he's going to talk about reconciling this with neutrality and start pumping our intuitions there and asking us important questions.
Yeah, so Pooja did a beautiful job, but went quite quickly over this notion of digressive proportionality. And I want to sort of ease into it by just like pressuring some things that sound natural but are all contradictory with each other. So they sort of create a paradox that forces us to think a step later. Is there a slide for this, Pooja, on the neutrality stuff? Or
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what is neutrality? So like, here's a bunch of different notions of neutrality, which like lots of people and maybe the same people in many different contexts all go rah-rah for, but like actually can't be consistent with each other. So like one notion of neutrality is like, every country should be treated the same. But then you're like, well, what about some countries are much bigger than others, and maybe some countries are much richer than others, and oh, well, I don't know. Okay, and then like resources should be treated the same, like packets of information or units of compute or units of stake should all be treated symmetrically. But wait, like some people have a lot more of that than other people, and is that fair? And like maybe it's concentrated in certain countries, and maybe those countries are all really coordinated, and maybe that's not good, and then the US and China will just dominate everyone, and And then like another version is individual. So like proof of personhood people are like really into, like, you know, every person should have the same rights, and you know, it's really unfair that the Electoral College gives more like voice to certain people and whatever. But then you're like, oh, but like, you know, what if that just leads like the majority of white people to totally screw over black people in the US, or like, you know, Hindus and, you know, Muslims in India, and like, well, we also care about resources as well, and we care about what countries people. So anyways, the point is that there's a bunch of different notions of neutrality that we invoke in different contexts, often very similar contexts, and that are like pretty directly in conflict with each other. And I think there's like a really profound idea that starts to point the way to like how we might try to reconcile these that comes from this statistician named Lionel Penrose. So what Lionel Penrose said is that if you have correlated things, and then a bunch of uncoordinated things, the coordinated things get heard much more than proportional to like how loud they speak or how much votes they have or whatever. And that comes from a very basic statistical principle, which is if you have uncorrelated things, they tend to cancel each other out. And so like their aggregate size only grows as the square root of the number of uncorrelated things, whereas a single correlated thing that scales up grows linearly in its strength. And that might sound like a little bit abstract statistics, but like it's something that literally you can just recognize from dinner conversation. So like if you go to a crowded restaurant, there'll be all sorts of people talking, right? And like the total volume of all the people talking will be like massively louder than the person you're trying to listen to next to you. And yet somehow you can still hear that person because they're just slightly louder than any of the individual other voices. And your brain, like the whole mechanism of noise, is to like take things that are uncoordinated and a little bit softer and cancel them out and like have that one coordinated thing that's slightly louder stick out, right? And so Penrose originally applied this as a way to think about how votes should be given to countries or, you know, provinces within a federal union based on the population of the subunit. So he said, no, it shouldn't be neutral across people because those people are coordinated with each other by their joint membership of the country or the subunit. And no, it shouldn't be neutral across units because units have different numbers of people in them. Instead, the right principle is digressive proportionality, which is that the allocation should be based on the square root of the number of people within the country. Yeah?
Is this like punishing fascism? Because more people are working together, the more they get penalized?
Kind of, yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. It's kind of like that. So the point is that... So he just, and in fact, this principle was adopted. So the Nice Treaty, the Polish delegation of the European Union proposed that they should literally use the square root, but people thought that was weird or whatever. And so it turns out that they put in a system where, like, if you look at the correlation between the square root and the number of, like, votes allocated, it's like a 99% correlation to that rule, but it doesn't literally use that rule because people thought that was too nerdy. But anyway, basically, that's the principle that's been used by the European Union. And the thing is, like, quadratic voting is just another application of that same principle. It's an application of that principle acknowledging that one site of correlation and coordination is individuals. And an individual with a bunch of stake or a bunch of voice credits or a bunch of whatever it is that they use to express stronger intensity is like a site of that sort of coordination, and you want to downweight that in this square root way because coordination can occur within that individual. But coordination can also occur within groups. And really what I want to suggest is that all the correlation discount stuff that Pooja's going at is just like a more general application of that principle. It's like looking for all the different sites of social coordination, whether they be within groups or individuals based on stake or people or whatever, and trying to downweight that coordination so that we ensure that voices are heard in a more fair way. Anyway. That's the basic frame that I want to give, and then there's a lot to talk about because we don't know how to do that yet. These are all just illustrations of possible things in that direction, and we're groping our way towards figuring it all out.
Yes, and as we continue groping our way forward, we'll have a deliberation together here about what it means and how should we be thinking about digital infrastructure. So. We're going to do that using a tool called Polis, which is a plural social technology. So I'll just take a moment to explain what we mean by that. So social technologies are voting, public goods funding, identity, money. These are all tools that we use to relate to each other and coordinate in society. And what we're doing at Radical Exchange is we're trying to bring about a new paradigm for technology that has a philosophy underlying it. And that philosophy is the philosophy of plurality. So I won't go too much into it, but when we're instantiating pluralistic social philosophy in technology, there are two things that we want to be looking for. One is we want technologies that help recognize and sort of provide better resolution into the different social dimensions that exist within a community. And then we want technologies to also foster cooperation across social difference. And sometimes that means fostering or illuminating the points of common ground. And sometimes that means illuminating the points of divergence so that they can be worked out. So Polis is a very simple tool, but before I give this explanation, I know that our Wi-Fi is not so great. So I'll skip ahead and ask you to point your phones to this QR code so that in a few minutes from now, you will all have it on your phone, and then I'll come back and explain it.
Well, as they say in Latin America, ojalá.
Ojalá. Okay, so what is Polis? Now, come back here.
We have a recommendation from Shrey. If you sign into the workshop Wi-Fi with the password buildit2020, it's much faster than the conference Wi-Fi.
22.
Okay, workshop Wi-Fi, password.
DEF CON workshop, build it, all lowercase, 22.
Thanks, Shrey. Okay, so no need to go into it right now. Come back here and I'll just tell you a little bit about this tool and then we'll start exploring it together. So the first thing is that it starts with an open question and then the participants can write statements in response to it. And each statement will generate a card like this, and the other participants are going to be able to agree, disagree, or pass each of the comments. And then what Polis does is that it takes all of that data and then it clusters all of the participants into different opinion bubbles. So according to the opinion bubbles are defined according to how similarly these people voted. So you can see what are the different social dimensions and dimensions of opinions within a group. And then the last thing that it does is that it brings to the surface what are the points of common ground that these groups that have diverging views share. So one example of how this has been used in the past is in Taiwan. This is used in Taiwan at the national level, and they used it a few years ago to try to understand how to regulate ride-sharing companies. So in Brazil, where I'm from, this was a super polarized debate, and I'm sure in many other places. And there it was as well, and there was a strong pro-Uber camp, strong anti-Uber camp. And then what police did there, what it surfaced was just good common sense. So the things that came up were that taxi cabs should no longer be orange. Everyone agreed to that before they had to be orange in Taiwan. That this was an opportunity to review passenger safety regulations and questions of liability insurance. So just good common sense that usually in the technologies that we use, we don't have that. We have the exact opposite. We have the polarizing statements are the ones that come to the surface. And we are stuck in our ability to come together and debate productively as a society. So this is an example of a plural social technology, and we're going to experiment with it together right now. And this is our question: how should we think about neutrality in digital infrastructure? So the first thing that we'll do is we'll take 5 minutes to evaluate some of the comments that are already there. So you can go to the link, and then I'll be back with you in a moment. All right, so we'll now move to the next step, which is, for the next 5 minutes, we'll add new statements. So here's what makes a good statement for this exercise. The first thing is that it needs to be a standalone idea, because if you have two ideas in one statement, then the other participants won't be able to evaluate them. They might agree with one and disagree with others, so it's complicated. So one idea per statement. These need to be short statements, up to 140 characters, clear, concise, and hopefully raising new perspectives. So let's take another 5 to add statements in response to a question. Okay, so now let's look at our report, and then Polis generates a lot of data. Wow. Okay. So we had 5 groups and then it collapsed into 2 groups. Super interesting. So Polis generates a lot of data. And we won't be able to have a super sort of in-depth analysis, but we'll present the structure of the report and see what are some of the high-level insights that Polis provided to us. So to the folks back there, el soporte técnico. Hola. ¿Pueden poner el link, por favor? Gracias. ¿Puede hacer un refresh?
Wait, but aren't I controlling it or no?
No, you're not controlling it. You're just seeing, so it's easy. Okay. So let's first look at some of the obvious things. So we had...
So first of all, I think we should just tell people what's in this report. So people,
Yeah, so let's first look into the structure, and then we'll get to some of the insights later. So the first thing that it does is, here's some data, 118 people voted, and out of that group, 109 were clustered into different opinion bubbles. We had 3,800 votes, evaluations of statements, 78 statements, 38 votes per person, so you got to little less than half of the statements, but there's probably many redundant statements, so it shouldn't be so bad. And then, if you can, puede poner un poquito más abajo, por favor. Ahí, pronto. So here, policies putting each of these dots corresponds to a statement, and it's putting all of the statements on a spectrum from consensus statements to divisive statements. And as you can see, we have a lot more consensus than divisiveness. So it's just one thing that is interesting to notice is how social media distorts that picture for us. It makes us believe that we have a lot more divisions, but really we have a lot more consensus. So, ¿puede poner el mouse en el punto más extremo del lado derecho? Gracias. Okay, let's see what's the most divisive statement. Neutrality means treating every country the same, even if one country is richer than the other. En el otro punto más a la izquierda, por favor. Gracias. Means treating every unique person the same. Más a la izquierda, por favor. Neutrality means treating every blockchain and protocol the same and enabling interoperability between them. So these are getting to sort of similar things. And as you can see, what Polis is doing now, we have three groups very dynamically changing. So group A has 44 people, group B has 26 people, and group C has 39 people. And on group A, which has 44, 65% of the members of group A agreed with it, whereas everyone on group B disagreed with it, and the majority, the large majority of people on group C disagrees with it. So here, it's an example of like surfacing what are the areas of divisiveness and the importance of sort of illuminating what are the points of conflict, because this gives a clear opportunity to have a more informed conversation about this specific topic. Why is it that the folks on group A think that, and why is it that the folks on group B and C disagree? So, ¿puede poner en los puntos más de la derecha, por favor? Let's see what we agree about. Neutrality is context dependent, and these questions lack enough context to be useful. Okay, I'm thinking. en otro, en la derecha. Neutrality is different from fairness. What else? We're groping towards something. Be patient with us. We're trying. Okay, so uno más. Más para la izquierda. Neutrality is not about removing biases, it's about embracing them all. So we can see. Yeah, people didn't answer, but out of those who answered, about 40% of people in each
group.
Just
to be clear, agreed. When you have a very large number of people, you should expect that white section to take up almost all the space, because the whole point is that you get a random selection of things, and it tries to pick up the underlying statistical correlations rather than like literally having everyone go through every statement. That's the whole point of the...
Could everyone hear that? Okay. So now, puede bajar más un poco? This was just to give a few, like a taste of like what were some of the divisive and consensual agreements, but we'll look into them and sort of analyze it more afterwards. But now let's look into what are some of the opinion bubbles. What puede bajar más un poco, por favor? Más. Ahí. Pronto. Yes.
And here, like in the other one that it says that it has everything in red, the one on the top, can you explain that a little bit? Like how?
Which
how
one on the top? The one that was in the consensus?
Yeah,
so if it was everything in red, it means that everyone in that opinion group disagreed with that statement. So let's see, how many clusters do we have now? Okay,
updated.
So we have three clusters. Let's look at what the
now,
folks
now,
on...
Now that we're back to two.
Okay.
The latest update.
¿Puede hacer un refresh, por favor? And, you know, this is a demonstration. Of course, you know, this tool has been used over days, so you can sort of work through the data much better. And usually very, very clear patterns emerge. But let's, you know, we'll do some... We'll try to take some high-level insights.
I have a pretty clear interpretation of the two groups.
Yeah. Okay. So you wanna
no,
share?
Let's go through it.
Puedes bajar para grupo A, por favor.
So one really important thing to understand is, I think Polis is amazing. It's super cool. It's had a huge impact on the world. It's also like absolute first, like think of it as the like Bitcoin of like this kind of percentage. It's
plural social technology.
Yeah, this is not at all optimized. There's like anyone who's a smart technologist in the room is going to think of like seven things that could be improved features, not all of which would work out. But like, it's just, it's like the most basic proof of concept of this type of idea. So.
Yeah. Okay. So in group A, we have 59 participants. Let's see what do they agree about. So about half of them think that neutrality means treating every unique person the same, whereas on group B, oh no, sorry, I read it wrong. 85% of people on group A thinks that neutrality means treating every unique person the same, whereas 76% of people in group B disagree with that. So that already sort of characterizes these different groups, but maybe if we look into it more, we can start to understand why. Let's see. So neutrality means treating all transactions the same, sort of similar principles. Neutrality means treating every country the same. Neutrality means that the rules are set to not privilege any specific participant. There's more shared agreement on that. But those three first statements already sort of indicate this division between groups A and B. They're it's very binary in the end.
Yeah, so why don't we go through it and I'll give an interpretation.
So let's go down to group B now to look into that. So group B has 50 participants, and group B seems interesting. So group B is largely clustered around disagreements. So the reds, and it's the disagreements to the three statements or statements in similar spirit. So neutrality means treating transactions the same as long as they can afford gas. That was not in the other one above. And the majority of people in group B disagree with that. And let's look at the first two. Neutrality in certain cases can be evaluated at a group level and not at an individual level. 94% of people in group B agrees with that. And they disagree that it means neutrality means treating every unique person the same. So you can see a pattern there. And then different forms of neutrality make sense in different contexts. For example, some should distinguish humans and bots, others should not, I guess, was the last word that is missing. 85% of people in group B agrees with that. So now, puede subir para majority, por favor? So here, actually, majority is not a good word, because what this is showing is the plural majority. So what are the statements that groups A and B, despite their divergences, where is it that they can find common ground? So neutrality means that means the rules are set to not privilege any specific participant. 81% overall agrees with that, 93% on group A, 69% on group B. All human beings are rational. Everyone agreed that this was a bit of a weird statement. Personal liberty should be protected above corporate good. Everyone agrees. Different forms of neutrality make sense in different contexts. For example, some should distinguish humans and bots. Some should, others not, should not. Fascism is needed to achieve neutrality. Lots of disagreements there. And neutrality is different from fairness. That's an important point. So what's interesting about this is that despite the divergences, these are the areas of common ground out of which you can start a conversation. So I'll hand it over to Glenn to share a few thoughts on the analysis as he was thinking about it here. And then also if anyone has any comments, we'll hand it back to you.
Puede bajar grupo A y grupo B, por favor?
Just group A.
Oh, grupo A.
Para grupo A, por favor. Puedes bajar para grupo A, por favor, señor? Gracias.
Okay. This group has statements like neutrality, and they agree with, well, the other group disagrees with statements like neutrality means treating every person the same. Neutrality means treating every transaction the same. Neutrality means treating everyone in the same country the same. Treating every country the same, et cetera. And so what I would describe as this group as is sort of like the maybe feel-good group or something like that. It's like there's many different forms of neutrality, which I was trying to argue were in tension with each other. And this group seems to be composed of people who kind of like all of them. You know, they're like, I don't want them to be in tension with each other, or they all sound good to me, or something like that. Like, that's sort of the vibe I get from group A. Group B, on the other hand, puede bajar a grupo B.
Perfecto.
This one really likes statements like neutrality in certain cases can't be evaluated at group, can be evaluated at group level and not individual level, or different forms of neutrality make sense in different contexts, and doesn't like neutrality is, you know, treating all the gas the same, neutrality is treating all the people the same. So the way I would characterize this is group A is like, I like it all, and group B is like, it's really complicated. You know what I mean? And so the main divide seems to be like group A is kind of embracing the contradictions, and group B is like trying to say, in the face of these contradictions, we've got to do a lot of really complicated thinking, and I probably can't, in a tweet-length thing, even express what I think the next steps of that are.
So
like that's my interpretation.
In that spirit, does anyone here feels like they identify with group A and wants to share? Elaborate a bit on their views and share with the rest of the group, or group B? Any volunteers? Okay. So are you on group A or group B?
You think? I'm on the group B, and I saw it like from a perspective from like a tolerance, and I think like, you know, group A, like the neutrality, yes, was like close or embraced as a tolerance by the group A. That's how I feel it. Like, we tolerate everything and try to neutralize.
Thanks.
Daryl Malone. I think I would have been in group A, I guess. And I think I would say that the complexity of neutrality kind of comes out if you look at it as a very specific thing that applies to those that are maintaining the function of a system and not necessarily looking at the decisions of a system. And I think that kind of, for me, makes it a lot simpler.
Hi guys, my name is Ferruccio. I think I associate myself with group B more because in a complex system, it's really difficult to evaluate neutrality when some agents, some people provide more value than others.
Hey, I'm Phil. So I agree with Glenn's notion about the many different conflicting neutralities, and I think that makes any decision taken on the basis of neutrality kind of reductionist. So I kind of vibe with the, like, it's complicated, you know, description. I think that's kind of accurate.
Hey, this is Hassan. One thing that I'm interested to understand is, like, how would we solve that, like, when, like, all countries would be treated the same? Aren't we better off splitting United States to 50 countries and so on? You know, like, how would we solve such kind of attack, which is like you will coordinate again in a different way, so you will take advantage with B. Yeah, obviously.
Okay, oh, one more.
Hi, I'm Saffron. I probably was in Group B, definitely. And I think maybe this means that we can't say that a system as a whole is or isn't neutral, but that we can evaluate some degree of neutrality along a particular axis and kind of look at it in a very multidimensional way. Okay, two more.
I was in Group A, and what I thought about the groupings was kind of it aligned with Vitalik's paper about vetoocracy and bulldozer political axis, and I feel like Group A is like the vetoocracy, and Group B is maybe more the bulldozer political axis.
For those who haven't read, can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
From what I remember, it was the vetoocracy was more like if there's a lot of people who are equally weighted, they'll be able to keep back kind of a tyranny of bulldozers, but bulldozers are needed in order to get a lot of stuff done. So you kind of need both groups to balance the system. That's what I remember.
All right. One more. Does anyone feel like they have something?
Victor Lee, I'm in Group B. Two thoughts is that one is probably some other people already mentioned that that the social difference, there's many dimensions. You cannot achieve neutrality on all dimensions at the same time. So it's a constrained neutrality, maybe in one or two axes or dimensions that's achievable. And also to achieve the neutrality require a value judgment, right? In what make it neutral? Is just treat them all the same, or sometimes maybe require treating differently in order to be neutral? And that require a value judgment that also very difficult. That's why I'm in the Group B.
Okay, question?
Yes. What would be your take on only Group B? Commenting like the vast majority of the people that have actually started commenting on these results are Group B, and what does that mean in terms of governance?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I wonder maybe if someone from Group A would like to elaborate a little bit more on their views and share with the rest of the group. Well, okay, here.
It was bigger than Group B, so there should be lots.
Yeah.
So you know your Group A, when you look at the statements from Group A that people all agreed on, if you agreed on most of those statements, then you're basically a Group A person. Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah, for me, I was in Group A, and I just found myself maybe a little bit naively having a bias towards just wanting to agree with all the statements. I mean, I kind of saw some of the tension between the statements, but I also just feel like there's a lot of different interpretations of what neutrality is, and kind of just found myself agreeing with all of them.
Okay.
I'm trying to wrap my head around the terms equity and equality, and I would like to know from your perspective if any of those is actually a neutral one in any of these senses.
So just one thing to say about equity and equality. I'm not sure, but I think that people are referring to a particular meme that defines those in a particular way. Not necessarily to like some abstract version of it. Do you know the meme that I'm talking about?
Yeah, probably yeah. That there's like a fence, yeah. And then you have like people with different heights. And is that the meme that you're talking about? Can you elaborate on that one?
Well, so,
So, like, for example, let's say, let's go to the statement that says...
How many people have seen that meme? Raise your hand. Okay, most people have seen that meme. So I won't, like, explain what it shows. But I just think that's what people are literally referring to. And I don't want to elaborate on it because I don't, you know, you can do whatever you want. But I think that's what people are thinking of.
But when we say neutrality means treating every unique person the same, are we taking into consideration that or not? And what are the things that we should be taking into consideration when we say treating the same?
Well, let's continue developing this conversation. The idea for now, the next step... Oh, sorry, you asked one final statement. Tranquil.
I just wanted to say that I have a little bit of a difficulty wrapping my head around the term neutrality, because like you mentioned, neutrality only exists in different contexts. And when we're trying to build systems that are supposed to be neutral, then that means that there's a certain bias to gain positive impact, to get negative impact, or whatever. And then when we're not building these systems by ourselves, we're building them together. And how can we make sure that we have as less bias as we can, or we don't corrupt that bias when we're building the system?
It's a great question. Folks, the idea for now, I want to stick to our agenda so that we can make the best use of our time together. The idea for now, this was a prompt and hopefully an exercise that shows some of the different views. And I have to say, I'm a bit impressed because usually it felt very binary, you know, the results here.
Now three groups, by the way.
What?
It's now three groups.
It's now three groups. Okay. You want to refresh it so we take a look at what group C is about? Quickly. No, puede hacer un recargar la página. What is group C about?
So A is the same as before, basically, but I'm trying to understand what group B and group C are now.
Okay. We'll come back with a few more comments, but the idea for now is just for you at your tables, for us to take 10 minutes to discuss this, and then as you can share your visions and some of the questions that this conversation on Polis brought up to mind, to you, and then what we'll do is we'll do another iteration on Polis. It becomes a lot more interesting when we iterate on it because we can see both sides, we can think about it, in a more informed way, and then the idea is to try to understand where are the bridges, what are the areas of common ground, what are some of the statements, new statements that can be added that can help bridge these groups. So let's just take 10 minutes to discuss at our tables how is it that we should be thinking about neutrality and your impressions about the exercise so far. Okay, so folks, come back here with me. Who's hearing me? Clap one time. Who's with me? Clap twice. Okay, sorry, one second. So what I'd like to do right now is to have some of you, so we asked you to share what was your reason for being in group A or group B, but is there anyone here who has very strong views on what neutrality is and wants to convey that to the rest of the group?
Hi guys, so our talk was primarily focused on debating neutrality within democracy. He's from Colombia, I'm from Mexico, he's from the US, Canada, and what we all talked about was that it's really complicated to have to weight each vote the same when some of that democracy is corrupted from the campaign start. For example, in Mexico, right now we have AMLO as a president, and he's building a lot of infrastructure projects that don't make sense, and more than 60% of the population agree with him. But it's really difficult for people who, well, it's really difficult for the right incentives to guide the correct policies, because when somebody can quickly say, okay, I'm gonna give you this short-term reward for your vote, Well, that's difficult. So what we were basically talking about was neutrality in different contexts basically makes it, yeah, it's very difficult to have a neutrality when the people acting on it have different incentives. Yeah.
So I'm from Colombia, and here in Colombia, a big social problematic is buying votes. So people, although we debated about how it ended up affecting the policies and the actual morality of it, at the end of the day, it's not the right incentive. It's an incentive external to the one that should be, which is the actual policies and beliefs of the governor. So weighing those people who are kind of neutral and don't know who to vote for or don't are not really interested in voting for, and you offer them an incentive, economic incentive, then it becomes like their vote is not for the people, it's for them. And their vote is not actually for what you're voting for, which is the governor, but for the whatever money they gave you. So should that vote be taken into account? Because according to a neutral perspective, it should, but I at least doubt it should.
Thanks.
So I think at our table, we all agreed that it's not an easy thing to define, especially coming from like foreign languages. We had like an English as a second language was like, we had a hard time even like reading those statements and comprehending them and processing. But one thing that we all agree that naturality is pretty much a status of here and now. Even with like what you just said about political vote, like here and now you're natural, but maybe within like a few weeks you will have an opinion and you will be agreeing or disagreeing. So it's almost like you cannot keep the state forever. It's just a here and now how you feel. And it's, yes, exactly. So we kind of had the same feelings about like this exercise and like how we think about it. And it changes for sure. It's not something we can have forever.
This is super interesting, sort of speaking to the needs for sort of continuous adaptability. Okay, so now I'm curious if was there any of you who were either on group A or group B, and after this conversation sort of gained a new understanding of the other group's perspective that you didn't have before, and maybe change your mind a little bit or just had a bit more nuance in your views and would like to share that with the rest of the group?
Yeah, I that really stood out to me. I'm Alex, by the way. That as I was sort of watching these questions and how people were describing neutrality and siding with it, I feel like neutrality, for one, took a lens where neutrality was very close to goodness, like as if some people were already feeling like neutrality was good and that's how they were voting. And another perspective which started clearly like forming for me as we were doing this was that some people, at least to how I see it now, seem to take neutrality as a rule we apply regardless of context, which if you're going to strictly logically define things, like I think that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, not everybody's going to view it that way. And then if you get into complexity and no, it's context dependent, then you get a very clear split. So it's really interesting to see multiple shifts in what I understood to be neutrality happen as we were going through how other people observed it.
Yeah, so kind of referring to what I was saying before, I mean, like one observation, like hearing here and like here discussion at the table was that like very often, like we want to tolerate someone else's opinion, we want to be like good in a society, but me being part of the group B, yes, kind of like, you know, opposing to say that, okay, we can't neutralize things, we can't tolerate everything, yes, like bad things should be called out, right? Like neutralizing the value, meaning like, you know, getting rid of our civilization kind of the thing, right? So yes, it's complex. But you know, the problem is that like at some extreme, yes, like neutral thing can be, in my opinion, bullshit. right? If we like really, no, like take the value out of it, right? Yeah, but I think like that's the problem.
Does anyone else have some bridging reflections? Okay.
Thanks. I'm Leonardo, and I was thinking about, because we are all talking about neutrality, like just neutrality, but the question it says about digital neutrality, right? So I was thinking about if it is like maybe a difference or something very specific to digital, because thinking about digital, I thought that digital, it maybe refers in general to binary data info, right? And it is built like that mainly for communicating. So maybe if we talk about digital neutrality, we are talking about communication across networks. So from that point, I see that maybe it's not like that complex, the term of neutrality, because if you talk about communicating over networks, it could be like any peer has the same chance to communicate with other peer, right? So at that point, I think that I was in the group A because I didn't see like a bigger complex problem, but something in a specific context. Then if we talk about neutrality as general, everything neutrality, I think that we get to that point where it can be many different things and have many different ways to express neutrality, right?
Yeah, and to emphasize that our question is directed towards digital neutrality. So that's digital public infrastructure, neutrality in digital infrastructure. Does anyone has any other sort of insights or bridging comments that they want to share? Okay.
I thought that was a very insightful exercise, and I think I was more associating myself with the group A at the start, and then they were discussing and I was hearing other people giving feedback. And I think, I mean, as just a human being, it's very hard to make binary choices, like just 100% yes or 100% no. And for me, it was like I would agree with the, like most of the maybe questions that the group A was agreeing, but unless there are some exceptional circumstances, kind of the situation. So for me, it was I was more it was closer to me to vote on A group because like maybe 80% I would agree that as a basic rule and basic understanding of neutrality, but then also leaving room for, you know, I don't know, exception and special cases rather than just saying completely no and disagreeing. So yeah.
So this is actually a wonderful point because we'll iterate on the platform one more time after all of these discussions. And in this iteration, this is the opportunity for you to add that extra nuance that you felt was missing in the former statement. So neutrality is ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta unless ta-ta-ta-ta. So you can add that nuance and that complexity in the second iteration.
This is a little bit of a troll point, but it did change my views. So someone said the word neutralize earlier, and I made the connection between neutrality and neutralization. Like, wouldn't the most neutral thing in the world just be if none of us really existed? That would be super fair. It'd be super conformant with all of Group A's statements, vacuously satisfy any definition of neutrality. So just putting that out there as an idea.
Okay.
So what he said, I just thought of something, like when we talk about digital neutrality, right, it obviously becomes a lot easier to enforce because you could like create things at protocol levels which humans cannot change. So obviously that is not, we don't exist, but we lock out a lot of choices that you could otherwise have in that, and then in a sense you are like a lot of like freedom of choice is gone, and thereby it's a lot more neutral, which is not like very far from what he said.
I was a little bit dismissive of Group A and identified with Group B, but just to, like, I thought that your comment was very insightful, which is, I think that many of people in Group A seem to have thought of each statement as having much more implied context than, like, I was thinking, like, they might have been stated in a universal way, but a lot of people thought, well, of course, they must be talking about context X or context Y. And so I'm in agreement with the statement because I see that implied context. But if we draw that out, maybe there wouldn't be as much disagreement between the two groups because group B was really thinking of them as very broad statements and group A was thinking of them as specific to the context where that principle is appropriate.
So now, in the spirit of adaptability, I want us to, I'm sorry, I can take more inputs because I want us to take the time to do one more round. Let's see how these notions evolve by going back to the platform and adding bridging statements, statements that have richer context and that add the exceptions to the rule and that you feel can sort of reflect anything that you might have learned about someone else's point of view today, or anything else that you might want to add. You know, it's not a tyranny, but I think one of the particularly interesting things is to try to add that additional context and nuance, and try to bridge what are some of those different views now that you've been more exposed to them. So let's take 5 minutes for that. Okay. Let's come back to the report and see how things have evolved. So, you know, this is interesting. I've done this workshop. I've used this tool a number of times, and I have to say that this was definitely the most binary conversation, the most binary group that I've ever worked with and have sort of seen represented in this tool, which to me, what that says is that this ecosystem needs a lot more of these kinds of tools and sort of conversations, because it feels like, yeah, it's just very binary. But we've evolved. We have a solid third group right now. So I think group A remains with similar views. Group B sort of skeptical and saying it's complex, it's complicated, but not really articulating what that complex vision is. And then kudos to group C, who is starting to create some of these articulations. So let's look into group C together. This was really interesting. So group C is saying neutrality must be put in a context, otherwise it doesn't make sense. Neutrality is not an optimal solution for the evolution of the human race. Incentives are inherently non-neutral, and they super disagree with treating every country the same and every unique person the same. So they're saying, you know, you need context, you need to take into account different incentives, and you need new... I think that what's... I won't put... My interpretation of the comment about ending the human race is that sort of affirming that that you want plurality, right? You want to have diversity, you don't want to collapse. So is there any conception of neutrality that can also make room for pluralism? Remains to be seen, but I think that this statement is expressed that this is a desirable thing. So yeah, this, let me do one more refresh here to see if anything different came on group B. The guy that said we must all perish to achieve neutrality made a good point. And let's look at the spectrum here. So a lot more concentration here on consensus. Neutrality, while important, is not the only goal. Neutrality is layered. Some layers of the system should strive to be neutral, and some layers can be biased. We should continue to should continue this exercise on a bar with drinks. Okay, so let's see what is it that all three groups can agree. Neutrality means the rules are set to not privilege any specific participants. Neutrality is different from fairness. Individuals should have autonomy over what products and services they use. And neutrality, while important, is not the only goal of a society and needs to be balanced with other priorities. And then what are some of the things that, it's interesting because there's almost usually in the plural majority section, there's more agreements than disagreements. This is pretty half and half. There's a lot of areas of common ground of disagreements. Neutrality is fascist. Neutrality means indifference, not caring. A lot of people disagree with that. Super interesting. The group is never right against the individual. As I mentioned, you know, this is super rich, and there, you know, it merits doing a proper analysis that we can't do right here. But hopefully this was an interesting exercise. Neutrality is a huge value in this ecosystem, and it's one that has very, very serious and important implications. So I'm curious to hear any thoughts, reflections, comments on this exercise or anything that you might have learned, and we'll be posting a more sort of thoughtful report of how this went online, so you can look for it on the Radical Exchange Twitter, or you can come up to the table and just give me your email. And hopefully this was a good exercise. So I'll take a few comments and then we'll wrap up.
It's a question about the tool and the exercise. I wanted to know if in the second round, did we vote again on the same statements, or the votes we already had issued of the statements on the first round stayed the same? Because like from a deliberative democratic perspective, it would be interesting to vote again on those issues, like after debating.
Yeah, Polis is open source software, so it needs a lot. It needs a lot of work, but no, the votes remain the same. The votes remain the same.
So I thought that was an interesting experiment. I guess one question is, I think this group is like all coming here with good faith and good intentions. And one thing I noticed is like, as people answered questions, even if I wasn't answering a question, the groups could like pretty quickly kind of shift. And also my position in the groups kind of could quickly shift. So are you thinking about this in the context of like people who might want to like intentionally create those shifts, or like kind of a more adversarial mindset, and how would you mitigate that, I guess?
No, yesterday we were giving this workshop to a group of organizations that are working on citizen participation in the southern hemisphere, and they were like, my God, this is like such a good tool for political manipulation, and you can use it for good or bad. I mean, it can go in any direction, but part of the thinking behind trying to advance a paradigm with more pluralistic social technology is that if we can provide more resolution into the different social dimensions that exist within a community, then that's the only thing that will unlock good governance and our ability to cooperate across diversity. So it's a double-edged sword. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
One other thing I'd say, Phil, is that it's just really interesting that, like, in this sort of socially conscious way of approaching things, as opposed to like ones that are modeled purely on marketing and individual incentives, we just have like no analyses whatsoever in any field of like incentive dynamics and attack. Like, it just doesn't exist. And like, that's a really interesting challenge here. Like, what is the incentive model that you even want to use to analyze this? Is it based on individual attacks? Is it based on group attacks? Is it like, and what are the optimal? I don't even know. I have no idea. Like, it's a really interesting question. So,
just to share my perspective on the highlighted statement, I thought the other priorities are more like today versus the future. Like, if you ask me, should the world today be neutral? Yes, of course, there should be fairness. Had the world been neutral from day one of existence, would we reach here? I don't know. So, I mean, I don't have an answer, obviously, but like, I thought that's what like that statement is all about. Like, today's neutrality versus neutrality as a tool to forward the human race.
Oh,
some comments on the exercise itself. I think that the exercise heavily depends on the quality of the questions, and probably we need to have some approach to exclude some of these questions. When we see some white areas there, probably those questions were not very, you know, so people didn't want to answer this question, probably we should exclude them. Or probably we should have another options on the poll, so where people are voting, so they can kind of exclude or report against this question.
Thanks. We, Radical Exchange, we do develop a few technologies, but this is not developed by us, it's by the amazing folks at the Computational Democracy Project. And it's an open source software. You can make a pull request or give them some support and share your feedback. But yeah, as Glenn was saying, this is a very, very primitive tool, but it is better than most of the things that we're using in trying to, you know, identify social groups and illuminate areas of common ground and disagreement. And it's something to, it's remarkable how primitive it is and the fact that it's still one of the best tools that we have, so we need to continue developing this.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello? Yeah, so going back to the earlier part of the, I find it interesting because I tried to prime the discussion with like a conception of decentralization. So we could actually use some of those if anyone here is a hacktivist and wants to improve Polis, we could actually import some of those concepts there, like, for example, having non-transferable NFTs to represent your groups and allowing quadratic voting, and then we could have a much richer perspective of clustering there. But the second observation I wanted to make, like, Glenn, you gave your perspective on the clustering, but I think the difference between group A and group B was, like, A was sort of more biased towards thinking about neutrality in the sort of voice camp of voice versus exit, and thinking about equality and notions of fairness and being like, yeah, of course, like, individuals, nation states, right? And then I think group B was maybe more focused on, like, neutrality as an exit. I should be able to send my information packet wherever I want to, or, like, you know, transactions independent of gas, or with the exception of gas. Sorry, with gas is the only limitation. So I thought I think there's some broad strokes that can be made there on, like, voice versus exit, and where you kind of are on that might inform your view of neutrality.
I just wanted to talk about, like, you know, using some learnings from, I mean, this workshop into the DAO, like DAO tooling specifically, right? So, like, very often in DAO that, you know, the questions we ask in a DAO maybe not the right, it's not very often the right one. Like, for example, yesterday we had a workshop with Maker on, like, how to optimize their governance process. And, like, you know, there was some drama related to basically some voting. Currently in Cosmos we have like this huge proposal for Atom 2.0. And very often we cannot, like, you know, get an agreement because the scope of a decision is huge, right? So, like, applying these tools for DAOs to make more, I mean, to break them down and make more specific decisions, yes, I guess that would really help in...
contribute to Polis, and I know that there was one integration with Web3 wallets that was made last year, but we ended up not using it, but I'm happy to connect you with the folks who worked on it. And as Glenn was saying, I mean, if you could quadratically vote on the statements, this would be incredible. If you could also connect it with SPTs that are being used today, for example, for at the Govern platform that creates SPTs for DAO contributions, and then you have internal clusters, you have external clusters. So, you know, there are many ways in which this can develop. I'll go to some of the other folks. Okay.
I mean, what do you mean of quadratic voting for like yes, no question? I mean, it's... I mean...
Be able to express the intensity of how much you agree or disagree, but it can have a quadratic system with it. You can have like credits that that you can spend.
If you have a set budget to spend, don't you have to see everything at the same time to figure out how to allocate your budget?
We have a software for quadratic voting that we developed at Radical Exchange, and the way that this happens is that you usually go through it, through the different proposals a couple times, and you sort of distribute it once, and then you sort of continue readjusting it a few times, which means that you probably need some way of curating a smaller number of statements. Our sort of way to hack around this is that in many workshops that we do at Radical Exchange, we first do a polis conversation, then we curate a ballot, and then we put it in the quadratic voting platform, and then we do a vote. So we do this deliberation, and there's also a delegation step. So you have some credits, then you delegate them around. Then we do a polis deliberation and then a quadratic vote in the end. And it works pretty well, like in groups that are actually like trying to work around a solution. We've seen groups that have sort of been having a very hard time in advancing on a particular issue for months. And then they did a workshop in 1.5 hours using these three tools. And they sort of unlocked a few things. So it's a pretty good idea, but it would be better to have them more integrated.
Did you guys also think there were some like broad strokes differences in one group thinking about the idea of neutrality versus one group thinking how would neutrality be applied in the real or the digital world?
Like, did you guys think that one group, maybe especially in the first one group was perhaps thinking about neutrality as an idea, and another group was thinking about neutrality, like in practice, like how would this translate? Okay, like it sounds good, but like because this would not translate well, thereby we disagree with it or agree with it, whatever.
Might be, folks. We have 5 more seconds in this workshop, so I just want to thank everyone, and I also want to say we have amazing infinite diversity in infinite combination stickers here, so you can come grab them. And and if you'd like to get the report of this exercise, we'll post it on the Radical Exchange Twitter, but I can send it to your email as well. Just come over and send me and give me your email address. And thank you so much.